Which one we look at this evening? Okay.
So I had a question that came up around something that I texted a couple of months ago. And it was about, you know, noticing how a part of me had assumed that if it keeps me in fear, that will help me not to make any mistakes, and then I won't get punished. And I can see that, you know, how that in some very young part of me would make sense. And the reply was something about how ego uses young and innocent parts of us to keep us hostage. So, and I'm not sure if I can, you know, if I can articulate my question clearly. You know, I, as I said, I can see how, you know, a part of me would come to that conclusion that it would be safer for me to be really afraid, you know, just from my upbringing and everything. I can see that. But that the response, it sounded like, you know, this nefarious, I don't know, energy, force that is called ego will take a hold of these parts, young, as it said, young and innocent parts. And I think I've always kind of struggled with, you know, I'm trying to understand how you, I mean, where, I don't know how to say it. Let me just, I read a book, it was called Homo Sapiens, and in it it describes the history of humanity. And in that book, the guy describes how about 100,000 years ago, something in the human brain or psyche changed so that we had imagination, so we could rally around abstracts that don't really exist. So according to this guy, before that time, we didn't have that capacity. We were like, you know, a species among so many others, like crawling around on this earth. And after that, because we had that capacity, we ended up on the top of the food chain. So
that's an interesting perspective, isn't it?
It made a lot of sense. I mean, you know, so he was talking about religion, money, all these ideas that, you know, rally people around that don't exist at all. So he was talking about how the imagination was born. And I remember Sherry saying to me as an answer, it's like, don't rely on, never rely on imagination. So is that, I don't know if you understand what I'm asking. It's like I'm trying to grapple with this idea, you know, what is this ego? Is that like an outside force that comes and takes over the human, the being, you know, as a parasite from the outside? Or is that something innate?
How would that be helpful to know?
You know, trying to understand what happened to me as a person, and from that extrapolating, you know, what has happened to us as a species, is really important to me.
So perhaps a way to reframe that would be, there's a way in which it's possible to understand something that is a universal context. This is how people, things operate, right? Like this is a universal set of experiences that human beings have, and so it makes sense to me that is my experience. Is that the extrapolation?
No, it's more like, you know, it's like when Sherry talks about ego and the effect of ego and all that, I can totally relate to that from my own personal experience, mm-hmm. that it's a force that almost took me over mm-hmm. and grabbed me by the neck and tried to drag me down. Mm-hmm. But I don't, you know, I've looked at my own personal history. I've never really totally understand what that is. And, you know, it's like maybe not everybody has that kind of, like, pretty extreme history, yeah. but, you know, I mean, I see as a species, we are going down, I mean, you know, we're going in that direction.
Uh-huh. Well, it would be a fascinating question to ask Sherry about, but two things that draw from for me. One, from a perspective of doing practice, it's like we use models, right? There's a model for which there's sufficient empirical evidence, let's just say, that the model works. So why the model works or is not as important as the fact of how the model works and how you can apply the model to your experience to assist you to reach an objective, which in this case is not suffering. Right?
Right.
And so, you know, we could, just like that book that talked about the evolution of the Homo sapiens and, you know, changes in the brain and all of that, we could spend a lot of time trying to work out what the ego is. But the fact is that the ego exists, and anyone who's ever looked at the nature of the mind has described their experiences to go, this is how it operates. And if this is how it's operating, then we don't have to take that on faith. We can which we're doing with the history of the Homo sapiens, right? We don't have to take that on faith. We can take that on experience. It's how it works. We can actually see how it works. And subsequent from that, the model also says, if it works this way, then the way in which for it to not work on me so that I can not have these experiences of suffering is this way. And so those seem to be the places where we particularly want to give the focus of the attention rather than the why question, which the Buddha never answered, by the way. No, he never said what the ego was. He just said that there is suffering. Suffering is caused by the ignorance, right? The state of the mind that thinks itself as separate from life. He didn't go into what the ego was or why the ego exists. We can make up whatever reasons we want for that, but that would sort of be in that same system of questioning a why rather than just perhaps working with, this is how it works and this is how I can stop it from working on me. Which is why I ask the question of how is it helpful for you to end suffering? Because the assumption that, from the process assumption that I project you're being told is, if you could make sense of it, then something. What? You're not at fault? It could make sense and therefore it would be okay? What is the promise of, if you understood it, then? Because it's not necessary to understand the why in order to solve the let's just say, I hate to use this word, but solve the problem. So here it is. I'm afraid. I can see the process of fear. I can listen to the conversation that kept me in fear. At some point in my life, that actually was a useful survival mechanism. I wake up this morning and I realize I'm being controlled by that, and it's not a useful survival mechanism anymore. Here's the way I redirect my attention from it so that I'm not controlled by the program anymore. So what is it that wants to take the attention away from being able to have a different experience and have the attention on, let's try to work out why this is happening? It's just an interesting place to look. Because we could make up all kinds of things and believe them to be true. But does that help us to have a different experience or practice towards a different experience? Because as we point out often in practice, that place of noodling the why is coming from the same place that causes the fear. The same process. Because it doesn't allow you to be here. Where, if we are, we have the experience of not necessarily needing to know the why. Specifically the text content, right? Because the other thing that conditioned process does is, well, you offer me this model. Within this model, I can parse my experience.
I don't understand what parse
so
experience means.
That you reported that there's some part of you that is, that you could see the process by which that identity got created in order to survive, right? And we talk about that all the time. There's the whole how does the personality get formed kind of thing that this practice offers as a model. And the reflection of the text was, and, you know, that system uses young parts of us to make us feel afraid. Now, that doesn't quite jive with how you understood your experience. And now we're in a place of what is perceived as contradiction. But if we're in the place of looking at how is this true in my experience, then the contradiction disappears. Because it's not only one model that's true. You can go to your experience to see how it's true, how that identity got created and was afraid, and how parts of you are used in order to manipulate your experience.
Well, see, in my the way I have looked at this was almost like it was a misunderstanding of a part,
uh-huh.
You know, that made sense out of a pretty senseless situation,
mm-hmm.
and drew certain conclusions,
mm-hmm.
that to a childish mind seemed pretty, you know, reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Right,
but that is different than looking at it as that these parts were used by some other force.
Let me ask you this. So how do you experience that now?
You mean right the second here?
No, just so at some point in your younger life, something happened and you survived that. How does that play out for you today? That same process.
Well, it seemed to me that how this young part has kept me in fear is I lost it now.
But that's actually really good. The young part is kept in fear. That's exactly the correct statement, right? What is keeping that fear alive? Is
ego, is that process.
That's the process.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was trying.
But it seems like there's like, you know, this person held up, and then there's there's all, you know, there's different parts.
Uh-huh.
And so one part that has the function of keeping me safe, or has taken over supposedly the function of keeping me safe, is really what has, you know, has created a lot of havoc in my life.
Well, that part is an aspect of ego.
Right.
You.
Yeah.
Right. So then that would sort of follow that conclusion of that. So here's the confusion that we have with aspects of the personality. We believe it's part of us. And what we're going for is that awareness that all of those are part of the system. Right? And so there is an aspect that is afraid, but if that aspect is being, there's another aspect that is the self-hating one or whatever else that's controlling your experience. It's not authentic in this moment. If something is coming in and acting or reacting to a situation, then you're not here to be present to the situation as
right.
it is.
Right.
So that's yeah. that's sort of you're being manipulated.
Right. Yeah. I get that.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's just it's interesting to see where the contradiction is and whether the process of the of assessing the contradiction is the same process. More money than ever.
Yeah.
Well, let's sit with it a little bit and see. Thank you. Jen?
So, seemingly different thing, but right along the same lines, it feels like someone was recently referring to apparently something that an old Zen master, Bankai, had said. I never heard this before, but using the image of, you know, that kind of collecting insights, like, oh, this and this and this, and sort of wanting to hold on to them and make something out of them, and that apparently he used the image that doing that is like you're on a moving ship and your sword falls overboard and you make a mark on the ship where your where the sword fell and it went overboard.
Uh-huh.
I just thought, oh, that's so perfect.
Uh-huh.
You know, that place of like, I'm gonna find it, or you know, just, yeah, exactly. And I just laughed when, and the person who was saying it was reporting the same thing, like watching themselves be and then kind of figuring it out, holding on to it, gotta get it all, kind of, and then that image of, oh, of course, the only reason that's proposed to me as a good idea is that it's not going to work.
So let me see if I'm following. The insight you have in looking at that story is that the reason it's a good idea to hold on to all of those insights is actually that it isn't.
That isn't a good idea.
Because it isn't a good idea because you can't do it.
Yeah.
So you spend your whole life trying to do something that is impossible to do.
Yeah. That takes me out of the experience that I'm supposedly seeking.
Uh-huh.
Right? Because there is the insight, which is presence. Mm-hmm. That's what that is. And then the attempt is to hold on to that, which, by definition, I have to leave the presence to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're seeking presence, mm-hmm. but the attempt to hold on to whatever the insight is, which is the experience of presence, implies leaving presence to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's contradictory to what your intention is.
Mm-hmm.
It's so interesting, right, Jen, because it basically points us to that attribute of conditioned mind, which is to focus on the content. Mm. The content, yes. That is that content of insight is, oh my God, I saw this thing. Mm. This thing is important.
Yeah.
As opposed to being in the process of insighting, which is the experience of being here and being open to all of the information that's dropping in.
Yeah.
And so that very movement of the attention from enjoying the experience of receiving insights to that's the insight that's important is the shift of the attention from being here to being in conditioned mind.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's the way it does it.
And that's the way it does it. And so in the year-long How You Do Anything is How You Do Everything retreat, which we have a morning radio show for every day, I think it was this morning's one of those, was that just today?
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was. that huge, it's again, it's one of those things, okay, that's not new, but wow, that's a big insight, of the insecurity is is being identified with the illusion of a separate self.
Uh-huh. So the assignment on the radio show for someone who is maybe not part of it was what makes you feel insecure.
Yeah. Uh-huh. What makes you feel insecure. And
that the identification with that conversation in conditioned mind is actually insecurity, because it's a movement away from here.
Yeah.
And any movement away from here is less than fully here.
Yeah.
And therefore it does feel like it's not enough.
Yes. And even in that example of the insight, holding on to the insight, that's a process of insecurity.
Yeah. I won't have it.
Exactly. And I've just gone back to this so many times, so it's obviously made a big impact on me, but one of the Sherry, we have a set of quote cards from Sherry, and, you know, we have a set in the dining hall, and one of them recently was something along the lines of, what we're afraid of is that the wisdom, love, and compassion won't be available to us when we need it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like this, okay, yeah, that was great, but like, I need to hold on to that for a rainy day, because I can remember a lot of times when I feel this way,
yeah,
and how easily it can pull me underwater. And so it really, I mean, it took me a little bit back to the last conversation. I can really relate to I don't know, that sense of compassion of like, no wonder she does that. No wonder she wants to hold on to the insights. No wonder she wants to make sense of it. No wonder, because when that's all that feels like is available to her, it's like, yeah, of course she would want to hang on to that. And it's, yeah. I thought you were saying something. that it just feels like that's... yeah, that's what gets taken from us.
So let's play with this and see if it works, right? So there's that place of disidentifying from the person who wants to hold on to the insight,
mm-hmm.
and watching from that disidentified place. So I'm not that person who's mm-hmm. who's desperate for the insight,
mm-hmm.
but with the eye of love,
mm-hmm.
I can see
mm-hmm.
how desperately she is
mm-hmm.
doing that, because that's what feels so good to her.
Yeah.
And what we, at one level of practice, mm-hmm. all we're doing is making those movements,
mm-hmm.
right? So I'm identified in this place where it feels like I'm desperately clinging to insight,
mm-hmm.
and I then am able to disidentify from that perspective
mm-hmm.
to a perspective that feels like there's someone who feels compassion
mm-hmm.
for
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we practice a little bit further,
mm-hmm.
we realize that this identification
mm-hmm.
is an identification with insecurity.
Yes.
That which is not enough,
mm-hmm.
and that which wants,
mm-hmm.
and that which clings,
yes.
and that which we call ego or conditioned mind.
Yes.
And then we identify with that wisdom, love, and compassion
mm-hmm.
that could actually look at that.
Mm-hmm.
A process of wisdom, love, and compassion that was there
mm-hmm.
in order to embrace
mm-hmm.
that which was seeking the attachment.
Yes.
And in that movement,
mm-hmm.
we build the faith that
yeah.
the wisdom, love, and compassion, which that smaller identification belief
yeah.
would never be there,
yeah.
is permanently there.
Yeah.
And that's how we build the faith
exactly.
that that's what we are
yeah.
and not
yeah.
that which believes it's not enough.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was the other half or side of that huge insight that folks were talking about on the radio show is, and that's the ultimate security.
That is the ultimate.
That's the ultimate security.
Which it goes back to the conversation, which
yeah.
is the experience
yeah.
that every single time I turn my attention
yeah.
to it,
yeah.
there is the ability to access it.
Yes.
And it's
yeah.
not a question of faith that
yeah.
can be shaken by
yeah.
the identification with that thing that thinks, that process that doesn't believe
yeah.
that there is security.
Yeah. You know, the thing that I've been looking at a lot, and I'll check this out, see what you said, but I think what makes it so tricky is that there's the practitioner, there's that authenticity who sees these possibilities, who sees the, right, who experiences that ultimate security, who is the wisdom, love, and compassion, experiences the wisdom, love, and compassion. And then there's this, like, twin of that, that looks the same, talks the same, has the same name, you know, all those things, that doesn't want it that at all. I mean, it's ego, basically. And so what is so tricky is to get a felt sense of those two places, because when the identification, quote, tries, this is another conversation this morning, when the identification tries to come back to the breath, right?
Uh-huh.
It doesn't want to. Uh-huh. And so it isn't going to work.
Well, and it's not even that it doesn't want to. So I think that's the bamboozle you're pointing to. Within the identification, there is no ability to disidentify.
Yeah, because it's a separate self pretending to want to disidentify.
Yeah, that's right. That's the same thing as the content versus the process. So it says it wants to be connected to wisdom, love, and compassion, but what it's really saying is, I'm not wisdom, love, and compassion, which is a true statement.
Right. Yeah.
So it cannot come back to wisdom, love, and compassion if it isn't the wisdom. It's an absence of.
Yeah.
That's what I'm identified with.
Yeah. And again, it's why the going beyond self-hate work is so huge. Mm-hmm. Because if we can just let all of that be, which just is the hardest thing in the world, then, in my experience, we can just watch when, okay, well, it's, quote, not working. Well, there's an identification here. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. It's not wrong. It's not bad. I don't even need to try to fix that because, of course, that's going to be the same thing that's going to come in. You know, but if we can sort of just let that be everything that it is and hold it in awareness, it's like it all just quietly sorts itself out.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so not to feel bad when I'm in a place of identification, because that's just part of the process.
Yeah.
I have to be identified in order to disidentify. Mm-hmm. And to know that by experience, that the wisdom, love, and compassion is always available.
Yeah, it's always there.
Yeah. Thank you. And then Christopher.
Christopher. What is the recitation? Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. And then we'll come back to Chris.
What is the recitation in the beginning and the end of the meditation? I'm new here, so I was very moved by it, but I don't know what it is.
So at the beginning of every sit?
Right.
The morning sit? I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. We do several sits at the monastery, and at the first sit of the day, we say what's known as the daily recollection. It's affiliated to our rosary, and every bead has a line, and so we recite that in the morning. And then for every other sit, it's called a short recitation. It's recited at the beginning and at the end of the meditation period. And it was something that Sherry actually wrote.
Okay.
And it's really just states our intention. Right?
Okay.
We're here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, that's what we'll be doing. And if ending suffering is not more important than anything, that's what we'll be doing. And it actually states the only rule that we have in this practice, which is we'll use everything in our experience. It's an attitude of mind. It reinforces the attitude of mind of the training that we do. Just what I'm here to do is to drop the leaves and pay attention, and then to use everything in my experience to see how I cause myself to suffer, and cause ourselves to suffer, for one purpose, which is to drop that and end suffering. And all three components of that is what we practice in awareness practice, because the first part of it is I develop that sense of curiosity about my process, and once I know that, I'm willing to drop it, because you could spend a long time the ego can navel gaze at itself, and we don't transcend suffering. So it's just a short statement of what our practice is.
And there are copies of it.
And you're welcome to take some. Take the copies if you wish.
Outside on the
table. It's right there on the little table coming in.
Great.
So there's a top, a big one, which is the daily recollection, and a short one, which is the short recitation.
Thank you. I think there's paper copies underneath the laminated copies.
Take the paper copy. And if you want an electronic one, you could just write information at Living Compassion and we'll send it to you.
Okay. Thank you.
And there's a CD too. Like there's a now you can, I guess, an MP3 where you can actually, we have the monastery reciting it with the bells and everything, so you can sit with the, all of it.
Terry gave me a copy of the DVD, so I think that's it. I just haven't gotten around to it.
That actually doesn't have the recitations on them.
Okay.
That's just the whole training of how to sit.
Okay.
But we have a different one that actually has the monastery's recording of the recitation. So
oh, great.
You can play it and sit with the bells of the morning recitation and the evening recitation. Okay. Good.
So I think I have enough insights to last for the next 3 or 4 hours.
Oh, all right, good. Well, we have the time.
What's that?
I said we have the time. It's the eternal now. That's what we call it.
Because I think there is a like in the story that was related that there's a lot of marks off the bow on the ship now. Watching where those stories went in, trying to figure out where they had vanished to. In some sense that I live from insight to insight. In other words, the kind of openness and energy that comes in via an insight that conditioning has defined practice in that way, that it feels, that an insight is what practice feels like.
Ooh.
Exactly. Because it's it changes from the openness to a subtle form of doing.
It's very limiting.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, to me, that's another sign of an ego process, is it's limited.
Yeah.
Because it restricts the feeling of presence. I mean, it's like going to Baskin Robbins with only vanilla as a flavor on the table, right?
Maybe different levels of sweetness, but the flavor.
But the flavor is vanilla. So all of thousands of different ways to experience presence is not defined as practice.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then it seems what happens is it becomes about disidentification rather than awareness.
Aha. Uh-huh. Oh, okay. Which I think I'm following what you're saying.
Really so sneaky, yeah.
Yeah. It's a double whammy, right? So if conditioned mind, the voices can define this is the experience of practice, then we look to it to determine if this is the experience of practice. The answer will be no. And that means you have to do something, which is to disidentify from this experience.
Yeah. Yeah, or even worse than that, it's yes for a while. Because my experience is that the insight, there's the openness that happens, and then it's like an aperture which feels as big as all it is to start, and then it's like it gradually starts smaller and smaller, and so it's still, there's still like remnants of it, or it still feels the same, but it's not as expansive.
It's that ego twin we're talking about.
Ego says, hey, look over here. I look over here, and then it goes like that.
Yeah.
And that's a place where it gets really nasty, because then where's practice in that point? And all of what came before doesn't count.
Now, I'm not following, Chris. Are you saying that that's what it tells you?
Yeah, because it doesn't last, and so what good was that? We just need another insight.
So let me make sure I'm following.
Right.
So here you are going along open-hearted and filled with insight and really present and really aware. Right.
Just an insight. Like this is the
like
insight du jour. Yeah.
Yeah. You're open to an insight.
Yeah.
And then the attention shifts from being here with whatever is going on to some conditioned thought, or something happens and your attention shifts to conditioning, and so as the attention shifts, then there's a way in which the awareness
collapses further. Yeah,
further
at some point.
And
yeah.
then it tells you, well, what's the point of your practice if you can look to me and I grab your expanded awareness? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. It's almost like an insight has a half-life.
Uh-huh.
And so there's like a kind of an art to knowing when I've received everything I can receive from it, and it's time to just go go someplace next.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
That's interesting phrasing, right? Because I think what you're, I don't know this, but let's see if this is your experience
okay.
I'm projecting, which is there's a way in which I'm present, I'm enjoying the benefits of the insight, and there's a moment where I'm no longer present.
Yeah, exactly. Where it's like, exactly.
Right.
So it's a 100% insight. I don't know how to describe it, right? It's just at one
you're
with
here.
All it is, you're here. And then gradually it's 70%, and then it's 50-50, and at that point, that's
well, but that's one way of looking at it. And the other way of looking at it is just, it's just that place of watching the sunset, right?
Yeah.
It's all light. And then it fades. But now you're present to the fade. You're not in a conditioned experience or interpretation
yeah.
of that the sunlight should last forever. So I project what you're noticing is the attention on an idea of insight rather than being present to that insight or here.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, the insight as it changes.
Yes, or the fact that you're in a process that is moving all the time.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And yes, there is a place where you might be receiving, and suddenly you're not receiving anymore, but you're receiving in a different way.
Right. But I'm not tuned into that.
But you're not tuned into that.
And so there's the opening for conditioned mind. Yeah, that's exactly
but
it.
Or the opening for conditioned mind went a long way before that. You know, that's the interesting thing to determine when that movement happens, when the awareness collapses. Because it's several movements, according to what you're noticing about.
Yeah, it's gradual. But
gradual.
It is, yeah. It feels like, I was looking at that too, it's like conditioning is kind of patient that way. It's like a boa constrictor, so every time you breathe out, it grabs a little more territory, a little more breath.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's good to notice the process by which awareness collapses.
Yeah. Yeah.
At a more and more minute level. Because the important part, I'm assuming, is that when you know that the attention has moved, if you don't know that there's been a leak of awareness all along because attention has been drifting, then you only come to at the point of the collapsed awareness, therefore ready to receive something from self-hate that says, no practice, Chris.
Yeah.
You know, you weren't able to maintain this open-ended expansive awareness for more than this much time, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
to know when that's happening and play with whether the aperture can be maintained to whatever the aperture is.
Yeah.
And there isn't a requirement that you have to have the same feeling in every moment. Because that's a false
aspect of the vanilla.
Yeah,
what was dropping in as you were saying that is that the well, it doesn't matter what I'm aware of, as long as I'm aware.
Right.
Have to move along with awareness and with life, and any lag behind will sooner or later be trouble.
Yeah, and it's not that we should be defensive of the trouble.
There is no trouble.
That's right. In the sense of, so I wake up and my attention has been on a conversation, I bring it back to here.
Where's the problem in that? Yeah, mm-hmm. right. That works.
It does actually. Yeah, and it's sneaky that way, right? Because you started us off that way, that we're trained to believe that we're going after a particular experience, and if I'm not having that experience for an extended period of time, then there's something wrong with what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. I know, I mean, it's just, the karma insists on some form of making progress,
uh-huh.
and that's associated with that. It's just like a subtle version of this is how we know we're making progress on the path, is because it, like you said, feels like vanilla ice cream. And so that's really familiar. And when that slows down, then, I mean, yeah, it's a, yeah.
Well, it's so true. I think we say it in different ways, that everybody wants to be a special ego, but there's nothing more boring and similar as an egocentric experience across human beings, right? The uniqueness of what we are comes from not being the same set of 13 bamboozles that we're constantly identified with. Comparison, I'm superior, I'm inferior, I'm awful.
We're doing a really good job at it.
Yeah, that is not available to you, right? Like, okay, your well-being is conditional. One more thing that everybody experiences as an ego.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And it's good to know that it's the karma. It's good to know that's not what I am.
Yeah.
Right? Or rather, that's not what this is.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is back to the incessant push towards what I think I deserve, or however that goes.
Yeah. The incessant push towards what I think I deserve.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right on target.
Yeah. And it's good to know what that is and what that push looks like, so that when I'm in it, I can go, okay, well, karma.
Yeah.
What next? Or what now?
Yeah.
Thank you. Christopher.
Oh,
you were just doing that show. Mm-hmm. Scott.
Good to be here.
Good to be here. Yes.
Laughing. A couple of things. Well, anyway, people were talking, and so this thing that I was looking at started to come up, and I'm like, oh, I would like to talk about that.
Uh-huh.
But then it seemed like part of what we were talking about is being aware of the process that you're in.
Uh-huh.
And so that's always a fun practice. Like, well, who's here now? Pain group listening. Uh-huh. And what I noticed was, I heard a couple things, and then it's like, how does that relate to me, essentially? How does it relate to what I'm looking at? And then as people are talking, if it connects to what I'm looking at, there's like, it like lights up. And then they keep talking, and if it doesn't, it's like gray. And then they say something else, and it lights up.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was really interesting.
Uh-huh.
Like, and what happened to the gray parts?
You know,
did I just got disregarded because, or I couldn't take it and had no place to land, or
So if I'm tracking what you're saying is, when you come into group, there's something you want to bring. But what the group prompted you to look at is to disidentify from what you want to bring to watching your process people were talking.
Yep.
And what you're noticing as people were talking is that there's either a resonance or not with what people are saying. It either lights up or it doesn't light up.
Even in the same conversation.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Could be that statement and then ding, and then that statement, great.
Uh-huh.
And that statement, ding. So there must be some, I don't know, instead of just listening, it seemed like there's something else going on.
Uh-huh. And do you have a sense of what that is? It's just that you're observing there's resonance and there isn't.
Yeah, it could be that simple. Mm-hmm. And then what I noticed, the conversation about that, which maybe is what I'm doing right now, which is, well, what is that? And how does that work? And, you know, like, what does that mean? And am I listening? Am I not? You know, so then it kind
of... Is it better to listen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh.
It reminds me too of just the more than two sentences going out of the head, just drop it. Yeah. So,
Well, to me, that whole process is just fun, right? It's one of those maddening places in Zen that after a point you just have to laugh, because the self, that recursive nature of the process ultimately gets you to that place where you blow conditioned mind.
Yeah.
And then you just have to laugh and go, well, who cares?
Yeah.
I'm just having a good time
when you caught, that's what was going on. I was just having a good time here. But the other thing that goes on sometimes when we have new folks is I find myself stepping into that position of what it might be like to be new in a group like this. And I was like, gosh, this must just sound like a foreign language. You know, like I'm barely keeping up that I live here. But then I noticed what I was enjoying was the energy. It doesn't really matter, as we say often, it doesn't really matter what we're talking about. It's like when you're with the guide or with each other, really, the transformation's happening just by being here and practicing being present, which was what we're doing by sharing our experience and being facilitated.
Yes, because it's the inciting process that we've all touched on, right? That the real place I'm living in is in awareness. I'm paying attention and I'm being here to what's going on. It's the presence that makes it an exciting place to
exactly.
be, not the content of what is being said.
Yeah.
And an experience of that could be light, great, light,
yeah,
great,
right.
Or, oh, inside. Where can I park that inside, right?
Yeah, and then I figured I'm going to do this in a simple way, but one of the things I was looking at, what was being talked about, I thought was, so essentially there's that this place where we're identified. You know, we're identified, with, we say, with ego. And we don't know that until we do. And one of the things that's wonderful...
Yes, that's a very good point.
Yeah.
I don't know I'm identified until I do.
Yeah.
Someone helpfully points it out.
Yes, which is what I've been seeing all day. Just, I mean, like you asked me a couple questions today. Each time it was like, whoa, I was identified with something. It just feels like, no, I'm here and I'm seeing this and this is what it's like.
Uh-huh.
Where this all makes sense from this place of identification. So anyway, I've been looking at a major identity who wants approval, and he's in this role on the property, and it doesn't work to get approval. And no one will do that because there's a wisdom that approval will maintain the identity, not allow the person to see.
Well, the point is, right, Scott, the identity wants the approval. The assumption is that you're not approved of.
Right. Unless it's on this term, doing it this way, that's approval
right.
means.
So it's the same thing. There's a limitation that's been imposed already on an assumption that's a lie.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, a limitation on a lie, that's good.
Yeah.
So anyway, one of the things that I was talking to you about...
Because it's really important. It's not that... The structure won't give you the approval because it maintains the identity. Well, it won't because it's like asking something false, something true to affirm what's false.
Uh-huh.
Right? It's not like you don't have approval or the approval is not always being given.
Right. I mean, that's the whole core of identities are always living in a lack.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And you can define ego as the absence of.
Yeah, the absence of. And that's the baseline.
Yeah.
Truth.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I think someone was talking about I'm not lovable.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
I am not. I is not.
Yeah.
It's a good definition of ego.
And then, of course, then the identity has to go around not looking for approval, but looking for disapproval.
That's right.
Because otherwise, if the assumption was you're already approved of or you're already loved, where would the identity be out of a job?
Right, but it won't ever believe that.
No. Well, it's not in its interest to do that.
Right. Because otherwise it would be an identity that has approval rather than an identity looking for approval.
Right.
Yeah. It's just good to see... You know, it's hard to see because it's such a smoke and mirrors game because what is presented is not what is true. So I want this it's a good thing to do. I want to do a good job.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I want to do a good job. We're so conditioned to be, that's a good person thing to be.
Yeah, look at the school system. Yeah.
I want to get good grades. I want to be at the top of the class. I want the teacher to like me.
Yeah. So in a place where that's not working, that doesn't work. And then I try it again and it doesn't work. And then I try it harder and then I try to do all the kid control.
10,000 ways it doesn't work.
It doesn't work. And so I'm talking about that place of like how I can feel the system, the jitter of it not working and the stress on the body and just like, so it's sort of like, there's nowhere else, and then, you know, we're cheeks coming up, we're doing, there's a lot of other things going on, and so it's just a perfect circumstance to, okay, like I have to let go, I have to practice letting go.
Yeah.
And so I had a concrete way that I was like, oh, but I can't see the alternative. I can't see there's another way to be.
Which is another part of being identified, yeah. Is that's the only orientation.
Exactly.
Nothing else is.
And they never see that. They can't.
Yeah.
It's like I'm
trained to have blinkers for vanilla ice cream flavor.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, and it feels like if you're asking me to do something else, I'm stepping out to some just complete void where I'm just going to fall and not exist, which actually is true. But so anyway, so I got to practice. So I was like, well, I don't know how. And so I was in this meeting with these, you know, wonderful practicing people, and I was supposed to be the person, quote, and you know, in this mind, leading the meeting.
Uh-huh.
And so I have the agenda items, and I'm keeping track of that and making sure that we get them before the end of the meeting. And I'm not doing that. I mean, I got a couple of them. But everybody else had to bring up something that I forgot. And at the end, I thought, well, that was actually lovely. Mm-hmm. Because before, it's like, I have to make this happen. And if me doing a good job is, I've got all the agenda items. I'm not going to let anyone slip. Like, where are the six days? You know, all that stuff. And, of course, all of that just collapses everything. I can't see anything but the two things on my paper. If anything else came in, there's no room for it, you know. And it's like, oh, this is one thing. This is one.
Yeah.
I'm not doing this alone.
Yeah.
So I say some things, and then another person says some, and then it's like a symphony.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like the violin is going to make the show by itself. The violins are pretty cool, but you know, usually you want the whole orchestra.
Yeah.
And that's what I got to experience, and it was so relaxing that it was an experience of, I don't have to do this. It's not up to me, which of course is such a egocentric place to be, and it's a real place of suffering.
Yeah.
But to have that experience, which is that tangible place of life coming up, or the, you know, Indiana Jones stepping out and the stone coming to meet. Those are the kinds of things that I think just happen over and over again, I think you were saying with Chris.
Yeah.
And then you start to live there.
Yeah.
It's not such a quote leap.
Well, and you know, the fascinating thing for me when you say that, right, Scott, is with a lot of practice we see the cycles of the process, right? Mm-hmm. So here you are in this identification, really trying hard to make it work, get the approval, stay on top of it, facilitate it over and over again, trying harder and harder and harder. And then there's a way of even knowing, I'm going to have to let go of this because the suffering is intense. Mm-hmm. And you don't let go of it. Life lets you let go of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? To arrive at this meeting in the identification, mm-hmm. and then watch how life takes the meeting over, mm-hmm. at the end of which you have an experience of being completely connected,
mm-hmm.
and watching how something gets done. All aspects, all nodes of intelligence, all everything participating, including you.
Mm-hmm.
And what you wake up into is the disidentification.
Yeah.
So even, I can't even disidentify.
Mm-hmm.
But I have the
right.
intention of saying, this isn't working, I'm suffering so much. I don't know how to do this. I don't even know how to not do this.
Right, exactly.
Right? And then there's a way in which the surrender happens for us, which
yeah.
is an absolutely miraculous, marvelous experience.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you
yeah.
have it more enough times, when I get to that place where I'm really identified and I don't know how to identify, I can go, I don't know how to do this. And we could bet on the certainty of it that it will happen. How it happens, when it happens, I don't know. But I won't make it happen, and it will happen.
Yeah.
And that's fate.
Yeah, because it's back to that. That's how that works.
That's how that works.
Yeah, I don't even have to know why that works that way. I mean,
because somewhere in there you did surrender.
Yeah, well, it's been a process.
Yeah.
I can see all the, I mean, talking with you was a big piece of that, but all the stuff, I mean, all of it, you can just see. And that was just another step, I presume, to
yeah.
more
yeah.
of that.
Yeah. And there's some piece in the puzzle that drops in that allows awareness to have the insight pattern, the insight that creates the pattern of how it will awaken to itself.
Uh-huh.
And in every identification,
yeah.
disidentification, something drops in. Content, process, context, doesn't matter what.
Mm-hmm.
But it builds the muscle of awakening.
Yeah.
Right?
And that's what's beautiful about this practice, is that building that muscle of awakening is an experience.
Yes.
It's a direct experience. It's nothing you can read or even talk about, really. Mm-hmm. It's that direct experience, and that's how we, quote, know.
Yeah, and you're so taken care of.
I'm taken care of.
Right? Because that place of feeling completely connected as an experience is no approval is substitute for that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, the falsity of the longing.
Yeah.
And its lack of ability to fulfill.
Right.
Becomes so evident in what we receive in fulfillment.
Yeah, you're right. So then when you receive the fulfillment, you really just can't go along with that. It's like, wait a second.
Take me.
Yeah.
Thank you. Require.
Well, first of all, I just want to wish everybody happy longest day of the year.
Summer solstice! So 96 degrees and rising.
It's so amazing to me. It's halfway already. Yeah. But, oh, wow. And there's just so much in that last conversation. Because I just love being reminded that it's just the being, in group. Oftentimes, I feel like this little kid kind of running along behind. I'm trying so hard to follow what's being said. This identity, like, you know, just trying to put all the parts together and make sense, and like, you know, and then if somebody, and if the facilitator goes, oh, that's really subtle, she just goes, wow, you know, I give up, you know, for sure, if it's subtle, it's not going to be, you're not going to get it, and it's important to get it, you know, and just looking, and I mean, the experience I have a group this evening I'm just so delighted to be here, mm-hmm. and it just feels very wonderful and very present, and so all that other stuff about I've got to make sense of this
yammer,
you know.
and that is the difference, mm-hmm. because again, I think we were talking about it with Jen, that we're so conditioned to believe that it's the content that makes mm-hmm. the difference, yeah. right? If I understand these pieces, mm-hmm. then I am going to get something.
yes.
But to be present and let all of that just float
right.
in whatever, and just not make sure we don't miss being here
exactly.
is what counts.
I mean, it all just cycles back around to of being getting approval, you know, like, yeah, okay, God, I understand that, check, I understood that, oh, check, you know, I'm like, I'm coasted, I've got this, you know, I got this nailed, you know, I could converse with the best of them, you know, and just have it, and, you know, that's not often my experience, because of that, you know, that orientation.
Well, and it sounds like what the orientation is to ensure that even if you get mm-hmm. it,
yeah.
you don't actually have it.
Right? Exactly.
It doesn't matter how much you get, because it's always looking for the fact that you haven't gotten it.
And if it's got, that was like that was like some kind of abnormality or something, you know. And that, yeah. Yeah, so I just appreciate it.
Good to catch on, right? Because as soon as we can recognize the process, I can drop it and go, I'm just going to sit here and have a good time.
I'm just going to have a good time with these great, lovely people.
Yeah.
You know, that I'm just practicing ending suffering. I mean, that's the whole thing. You know, the rest.
They're all happy.
They're all. I mean, wow.
And curious. I think that's
curious.
It, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I've seen this. I really don't even have vocabulary to define or describe
right.
what it is. But I'm in that process of being excited about it.
Yeah. Really. And also, I just want to say, I'm in the process of being excited about. And you know, this is a great projection exercise, but we're about to have a retreat start in 2 days.
Yes.
And every once in a while, though, I imagine these folks. You know, like, oh, this makes my heart, you know, they're all over the place, all different parts of the world, you know.
All packing their bags,
all coming to do this brave and courageous thing to come, you know, to come to this honest retreat that I remember coming to for the very first time. And it just makes me happy to think of that, you know, taking place.
It's very much a present moment experience, right? Because we're tuning into the possibility of something that is our experience. Mm-hmm. It is your experience. How many retreats have you been here for, right?
Yeah.
So go ahead.
Yeah.
That turning the attention to that experience produces that experience, the anticipation, the welcoming, the participation in the process. All happening right now. And I've projected a very, very different experience when they're actually here, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the interesting part. The experience I'm having now, just because it's about people who will get here in 2 days, doesn't mean it's not my current experience. Right? That's the confusion of the content of the process. I'm just having a really good time being here with all these imaginary people.
I know. They're so good when they're imaginary. But I'm so glad you said that because I totally forgot that I mean, one of the reasons I wanted to live at the monastery was that I would never have to miss another retreat. You know, I thought, oh, it just seemed like heaven. I could live at the monastery and be there for every single retreat. And I didn't have to ask my supervisor for the time off and, you know, all of that stuff. And then it's so easy how that gets forgotten, you know, that gets folded into like, oh my God.
This is the new normal. I'm here for every retreat. I found my supervisor, I cannot come on.
Supervisor, do I really have to do this? You know,
process. I was looking at someone earlier today that we forget the cycles of enthusiasm, right? When there's something new, there's a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. And that energy gets transformed into a, I always think about it as fast-acting fuel to get started, and then you need slow burn to get you through it. And just before you end something, you need fast-acting fuel in order to finish it. And where all of us falter is those places of the transformation of energy between fast-acting and slow burning fast. So the reason you don't, when the conditioning takes over that process and says, well, I'm not feeling happy anymore, I'm going to quit. High energy feeling is gone. Able to know that the energy is shifted, but that doesn't mean that the excitement and the enthusiasm and the wholeheartedness and the enjoyment, it's just taken on a different flavor.
Oh, that's very interesting. We're moving into slow burn.
Now it's possible to see every leaf on the tree, rather than that just gorgeous blue, right? You go from being an impressionist to being something that is able to be very, very present to minute things. And it slows down, and there's an opening, and a different sort of appreciation, like the stream to the river, right?
Yeah. And certainly, wouldn't want to be in that... What would you call it? Liftoff phase forever, you know, or that reentry phase, you know.
You burn up.
Just absolutely burn up.
Yeah.
And so,
But to know that, I think, is important because it allows us not to believe the conditioned conversation that says slow burn is unexciting. You need something new to look for, right? But there's a way in which we recalibrate to enjoying this flavor, and then this flavor, and then this.
That's really interesting. When you said that, I know that my immediate reaction was like, oh no, I want the slow burn. But I don't think that's true. I mean, there's
something there.
like, yeah, I want to be in that liftoff, you know, and when that's not happening, it's like, feels kind of at loose ends.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Kind of like, what do I do now?
Yeah.
You know, there's not that kind of intensity of,
yeah. There's not that intensity. And so it's an important process observation, right? Mm-hmm. No matter what the energy is, the conditioned conversation is pointing to how that energy is not supposed to be that energy, it's supposed to be this energy,
uh-huh.
And therefore there's something that to be dissatisfied about.
Exactly.
So it's highly intense, and you go, oh, you know, I wish it would slow down, because it's too intense, and oh my God, it's dragging on forever, where's the excitement when it's that kind of energy in the moment? I think that it's sort of the ultimate of what we're doing, right? Which is to be present with whatever it is as it is.
Yeah.
And if that happens to be pure presence, wonderful. If that happens to be awareness mixed with some ego, then we're present to that.
To that.
There's nothing wrong with the proportions of the flavors that we're experiencing in any moment.
Yeah.
It just makes it interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes it interesting and just way more. There's just way more enthusiasm for all of it. It, you know, because it just eliminates those standards of
enjoyment.
Yeah, having to be a certain way, and it's all good.
All good. It comes back. I might not understand within quotes what mm-hmm. what is being said, but that doesn't prevent me from being here for it.
Right. Right. Yes. Not at all. And choosing to be part of it, choosing to participate, and choosing, you know, to just,
Thank you. Anyone else before we go?